Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
They were very dry, and their water limitation coming down the Rio Grande for them to do irrigation was already set to be limited for this year. So there's quite a bit of land there that was left dry. Probably, if planted, will be a dry land crop, but no moisture since early March, so I don't expect there's much there.
On the South Texas crop, David Gibson with the Texas Corn Producers.
As we come on around the coast, every grower I've talked to from Corpus all the way to Horton has either didn't get to plant or did plant, and now their crop is severely wilted and maybe past the point of no return in some places, since they should already be tasseled by now, and it's not.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's important to point out that roughly 80% of the crops that were harvested in Ukraine from the 2021 crop were, in fact, had left the country prior to the invasion.
Addressing the idea that we could see global shortages of grains based upon the Russian invasion of Ukraine, on the heels of a G7 meeting, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
So what we're dealing with is the balance, which is the 20 million metric tons. A significant amount, an important amount to move, but certainly not, it's not as if, 50 or 60 or 70% of the harvested crop remained in the country. So it's important to underscore that. I think everyone who's engaged and involved in this, everyone that was engaged in the conversations that we've had in the last several days is committed to doing everything possible to try to move as much grain out of that country as possible. Now, whether they get all 20 million metric tons out in the next several months or not, that's anybody's guess, but there's going to be a heck of an effort to try to get that done. In the meantime, I think it's incumbent upon the other countries, like the United States, Canada, and others, to see and look for ways in which we can provide assistance and help to fill whatever void may exist in those countries that have historically relied on Ukrainian grain or oils. And that's one of the reasons why we tapped the Emerson Trust in an effort to try to be able to direct product to Ethiopia and Sudan and Somalia, South Sudan, and other countries that are traditional recipients of Ukrainian product. And that's why I think why the administration has been so insistent that Congress rapidly passed the Ukraine relief package that is currently pending in the Senate, because that will provide additional resources and additional help on the humanitarian side. So a combination of a massive effort to try to move Ukrainian grain out and combined with a significant humanitarian commitment on the part of other nations like the United States, hopefully will help significantly reduce the risk of serious food shortages in countries that frankly can't wouldn't be able to handle from a stability standpoint massive food shortages. I think the second thing I would say is I am perhaps more concerned about the longer term, because if not all that 20 million metric tons gets moved, and then you have another crop, depending upon the nature of the crop, the estimates that we heard today from the Minister of Agriculture is that he expects to anticipate, weather obviously permitting, that maybe 50-60% of a normal crop would be produced in Ukraine, in which case there'll be additional grain that has to be moved out of the country because they don't need all of that to satisfy their own needs. And so we're going to have to continue to work hard to find creative routes for that grain to leave Ukraine, to try to deal with the infrastructure challenges that we currently have, and to make sure that the United States and other countries are prepared to fill the void. Many of the G7 nations indicated that they were going to have additional acres in production.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, it's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, I think when you look at the negative crosswinds, you got to point to the live cattle futures market. You know, we did see some volatility there, you know, with the Wednesday, a pretty strong trade. But overall, you know, markets were down. The June contract, that's really tethered to cash currently. Basis levels are really strong. It's not so much because cash prices are so great. It's because the futures prices have been taking a step back there.
Lee Schultz is a livestock economist at Iowa State.
You know, when you look at, we were down roughly $3 to $4 on the futures market as you look at those deferred contracts. Overall, we've seen cash hold relatively strong to those. You know, the concern I have now is the box beef market has really disappointed here in the spring, where we see these seasonally stronger levels. We're really been trading kind of near some lows for 2022 in the box beef trade. And I think that's kind of that the real concern there that's now flowing through into live cattle futures. Also, I'd be remiss not to talk about the corn market, right? You know, overall for the week, we weren't all that much stronger as you look at the May contract and even a little bit weaker for the July contract. But midweek, we traded really strong, and that really certainly pushed over to feeder cattle futures for the most part. But I think that's had some impact on live cattle futures, especially if you look at some of those deferred contracts.
We point to the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, or WASDE, report for grains, but he says, don't forget about livestock.
These are our first look at the beef balance sheet for 2023. You know, a lot of us have these balance sheets we maintain for ourselves. And so I would say that the 2023 numbers weren't a surprise, given where we are at in the current cattle cycle in that contractionary phase. You know, I think maybe a bit of a surprise in the latest WASDE estimates were that they increased production in 2022. We're not creating more cattle, but I think moving those cattle around a little bit in the form of culling rates have been a lot higher for cows because of strong cold cow beef prices. Also, we're still dealing with drought in half of the United States. And so that has increased those slaughter levels, added to that production. Also, we've seen placements of feeder cattle, I think, come into lots earlier. And so I think that's sped up that a little bit. So that production was increased. I think that maybe surprised the market a little bit going into what are some factors pressuring it. 2023 is numbers down really across the board. To put into some perspective, their WASDE's forecast would be the smallest production since 2016. You know, I think a stark comparison is we look at per capita consumption, which is really just a supply measure. You know, that'll be the smallest in 2015 and about 4 pounds per person less in 2023 than it was as we look at 2022. And so, you know, certainly entering that period of tighter supplies and, you know, something we'll continue to deal with here over the next couple of years. I will add one thing there, you know, prices is part of that in their forecasts. And so, you know, right now they have forecasts of these would be fed cattle prices about 14% higher in 2022 than 2021, and then add about another 10% increase on prices in 2023. So as would be expected, those tighter supplies are leading to higher prices. I think the challenge is we're also seeing much higher costs, right? So from a producer profitability, that's the big concern here is, you know, expansion is not driven by prices, it's driven by profits. And so even though those prices are higher, I think we're really challenged to see growth here in the short term because of those tight margins experienced by producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And we saw the big move after the report came out, and then obviously we got this news coming out from India over the weekend, basically stating they're going to halt exports. They posted this information over the weekend, and that in itself helped drive this thing higher.
Bob Maurer with Manduka Trading in Chicago talking about the limit moves on Monday and what's been fueling this red-hot wheat market.
I would say one thing that's kind of interesting about India is that, first of all, the government said it would allow exports backed by already issued letters of credit to continue. So it wasn't like they banned exports and anything that was on the books isn't going to happen. So that business at this point seems like it's going to get done. They also said that they could or probably would allow exports to countries that request it based on their ability to meet, or their willingness or want, I should say, their need to meet their food security needs. So even though exports are momentarily banned, there are some caveats there where some business could get done because they're sensitive to what's happening around the world. I get why they're doing it, because they want to make sure that they're taken care of, but it also looks like they're kicking the door open where they seem like they have enough for whatever reason when they do their math on the actual amount that they have readily available and what they'll need, that they might continue to do some business. So that we'll just kind of see how that news transpires, shall we say. But I think the market, at least based on face value, did what it's supposed to do, priced in this information, boom, prices go higher. So not only did we get a good setup from the report from the USDA on last week, but then, boom, we get another big piece of news over the weekend from India regarding that ban. Add to that the fact that France's wheat crop is not what it could be because of relative dryness there, and they need some pretty precipitation fairly quickly. Their wheat rating dropped to about 82%, good to excellent. That's a 7% decrease. Also, in terms of what's going on in Ukraine, we already know what's happening there, but it seems like towards the tail end of the planting progress there could be some shortages of fuel, could be shortages of fertilizer, other things that are needed like pesticides, so that could slow down the remaining progress and getting the crop in the ground, and also just moving what's there out, because it's basically primarily by rail as fast as they possibly can now, needs to get done. And if it doesn't get done, if things slow down, that could actually create some kind of bottleneck, especially for example, like the neighboring Romania and stuff, where if it creates a bottleneck because they all of a sudden need those same lines to do the same type of business, then that's going to slow things down and help to push the prices higher. Add to that, that Germany is, you know, reporting basically higher import prices versus April of 2021. So all these things together are just kind of indicating that there's a pretty tight scenario out there. And I think the one thing that is a bright spot in terms of maybe alleviating it is if India can open the doors a little bit for countries that need it. But again, that's a wait and see type of thing.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, wrapping up a meeting with the G7 recently, said, "We need accurate information."
For that reason, the G7 nations, including the United States, indicated a willingness to increase commitments or provide commitments of financial resources to the Agriculture Marketing Information System operated out of FAO.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The communique also expressed concern about recent export bans that have been put in place.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking earlier in the week following a G7 meeting.
Most recently, deep concern about the one that India recently announced in terms of wheat. We've already saw the impact of that export ban today as wheat prices shot up at a time when India is basically restraining or constraining the ability to access their wheat. These export bans have a tendency to distort the market, and that's precisely the wrong thing that should happen at this point in time. What we need is transparency in the market. What we need is a market that is helping to get goods in the most efficient way possible to those who are in need.
Vilsack also expressed concern with the potential of bad actors in market speculation.
We also talked during the course of the G7 meeting and in the communique about the possibility that there may very well be some speculation taking place in connection with some of the commodities, which is why it's necessary for us continue to look for transparency, continue to look for the collection of data and information that will enable us to have a true market picture. For that reason, the G7 nations, including the United States, indicated a willingness to increase commitments or to provide commitments of financial resources to the Agriculture Marketing Information System operated out of FAO. This is going to cover not only crop markets, but also fertilizer markets as well, so that we ensure greater transparency and limit the risk of speculation distorting the market.
And what about Ukrainian exports?
The challenge that roughly 20 million metric tons remains in the country and the need for it to be moved out of country so that there's sufficient storage for the incoming crop that will be harvested in the next several months. A lot of conversation on that, obviously, over the course of the last 4 or 5 days. European Union recently announcing a plan of action in an effort to try to facilitate the movement of that of those grains and oils, basically creating a call for the physical infrastructure of the cars, the vessels, the loaders that are necessary to move product, to streamline inspection capacity, to make it a 24/7 effort, to prioritize exports in terms of rail slots, developing and identifying storage infrastructure that could be used to, once product is moved, to be stored outside of Ukraine. The challenge is that currently there is probably a capacity at this point in time to do about 300,000 metric tons, but in fact, a month, and in fact, what needs to happen is between 5 and 6 million metric tons needs to be moved over the course of the next several months in order for Ukraine to have the capacity to harvest and to store the new crop. So we'll continue to look for ways in which, as a G7, as G7 nations, will continue to look for ways to provide assistance and help. What we have been provided by Ukraine is a list of equipment, testing equipment, weighing equipment that they are in need of. We will do a sort of a search of our own resources at USDA. We'll call on universities in the private sector that may be replacing similar equipment, and they have used equipment that may be still of some value. We will accumulate whatever information we can about the location and availability of such equipment and provide that as quickly as we possibly can to the Ukrainians.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Achieving greater transparency, price discovery, and fairness in the cattle market is critical to the survival of family farms and ranches.
Shelley Zisch is a fourth-generation rancher from Pettibone, North Dakota, serves on the board of directors for North Dakota's Farmers Union, and was testifying recently before the Senate Ag Committee on transparency.
In 2020, I chaired a livestock committee that NDFU established to develop rancher-led solutions to the challenges we face. In the 6 weeks leading up to our first meeting, the spread between box beef and fed cattle prices increased by over 300%. While those price swings were directly attributed to the pandemic-related disruptions, they also underscored the dangers of a highly concentrated food system. That committee identified 7 policy proposals to increase competition and fairness in the cattle and beef industries, establish transparent, truthful labeling on beef products, and increase local and regional slaughter capacity. One of Farmers Union's chief concerns is the decline of negotiated trades in the cattle industry. Ranchers need to have options when marketing their cattle, including trade cash trades and alternative marketing agreements. However, in the last 15 years, cash trades have declined from 52% to 20%. As the cash market thins, local livestock auctions are going out of business. If that trend continues, is allowed to continue, producers will lose those important marketing options. This is concerning because the cash market provides the transparency and price discovery ranchers need to negotiate a fair price for our cattle. The cash market also serves as the basis for all cattle prices. In our operation, we sell our cattle through a combination of cash sales and forward contracts that are negotiated. We use the cash price we receive to help us determine the fair market value for the cattle we will sell through those forward contracts. Without the transparency of a robust cash market, I am at a severe disadvantage when marketing my cattle, regardless of the marketing arrangement I use.
Zisch also talked about how this is not something that just happened overnight. As a matter of fact, Farmers Union has been working on it for quite some time.
NDFU was a strong early supporter of Senate Bill 949, commonly known, referred to as the 5014 bill. We believe establishing a floor for the cash market is critical to promoting fair and transparent marketplace. While we are disappointed the 5014 bill has not attracted a broader base of support, our top priority is finding a way to move this issue forward. The Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act is an important step toward protecting transparency in the cattle market. The Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act includes several provisions that will promote fairness and transparency in cattle markets. The bill establishes regional minimums for negotiated trades, which will preserve the cash market as an option for cattle producers and improve and preserve price discovery. The bill also requires 14-day slaughter reporting, expedites carcass reporting, and mandates reporting of cutout yield, all of which will give producers a better understanding of supply and demand factors affecting the market. Finally, the legislation establishes a cattle contract library, which will give cattle producers insight into contract terms that they should consider or avoid when using AMAs. Farmers Union is also a strong supporter of the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act, which will strengthen enforcement of existing competition laws. The Packers and Stockyards Act has existed for over 100 years, but a lack of enforcement has allowed the consolidation and anti-competitive practices to continue. USDA and the Department of Justice need stronger tools to enforce existing laws, and Senate Bill 3870 would give USDA the authority and resources it needs to make sure our laws are enforced the way Congress originally intended.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You can see only 1 in 10 Americans consumes the recommended minimum daily servings of fruit and vegetables. We consume too much meat, 20 to 60% above dietary guidelines.
At a recent Farm Foundation forum for farm food and the policies and practices behind America's dietary health, Dr. Robert Parlberg, author on Why Americans Are Unhealthy.
Too much ultra-processed food with added sugar, salt, and fat. And one conspicuous result of all this is that 42% of adults in the United States today are clinically obese. And that is, it's not just a high number, that's 3 times the share from the 1960s. Obesity now contributes to 30,000 deaths every year from diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancers.
And he challenges some of the assumptions that are tossed around.
But let's take a look at this assertion. The agricultural economists that I talk to know that this is completely untrue. The purpose of farm subsidies is not to boost food supplies in the market and make food cheap. It's to boost the income of farmers, usually by reducing supplies in the market, which drives up the price of food. We use import restrictions. We use land set asides. We mandate more non-food use of farm commodities. We make food expensive, not cheap. Now, Michael Pollan came to believe that our farm policies make food cheap after talking to some populist farm movement leaders to the more extreme supply control policies of the 1950s. And anything less than this, they consider to be a cheap food policy. It's not a cheap food policy. It's just a slightly less expensive food policy.
Also part of the forum, founder and executive director for Food for Climate League, Eve Turow-Paul.
I don't know that it'll be in a decade, but I do think that is on the horizon. And this is on the horizon for a number of reasons. Number one, and I know that this is going to make people squirm, but we can't continue to eat as much meat as we are eating for climate reasons and for human health reasons. That's just a fact. That is also related to why we should also diminish the amount of soy and corn that we produce, because there's going to be less of a marketplace for it if it's not animal feed. But that is just going to be a shift in the marketplace. It's inevitable for a number of reasons. But of course, we have created a global culture that's craving meat, right? You're seeing as people's incomes increase, they want meat because it's also a sign of being elite. You're seeing this happen in China. So really the question is, how do you provide for that eater demand without raising as much cattle as we currently do? And the solutions to that are these processed plant-based meat alternatives. It's also cultured meat. It's also just moving people towards a more plant-forward, whole plant-forward diet. I personally see a future where we are getting our food from a multitude of sources. I personally think that cultured meat is going to become an option for low-income individuals around the world. I think that these whole plant options are unfortunately going to become more of a luxury item for the middle and upper class. And again, there's just not enough time to really go into that. I also think that people are going to be fed both through aquaponic, hydroponic, and land-based specialty crop production.
a variety of opinions at a recent Farm Foundation forum. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So far we've had the economy's held strong. And, you know, that's been what's really been paired against inflation, right? As you're saying, well, you know, we're seeing the optimism in the market is the economy's great, right? That could be the rebound we see in stock prices and all that, although we're dealing with this inflation. So, you know, I think the longer we continue to deal with this inflation of higher prices, that's certainly eating into the economy and probably weakening that factor there as well. So, you know, overall, I'm not ready to say, you know, we're seeing a weakening in demand yet.
Iowa State livestock economist Lee Schultz.
I think, you know, there's a kink in the armor maybe as we look at the spring here a little bit and what we're seeing as far as where those prices are and, you know, possibly some concern there. But, you know, I think it's too early to say we're still in prime, you know, grilling season and demand, I think, could continue to hold there.